I got to take that doorbell out of my bathroom. I mean, seriously, what was I thinking?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Popular Science's Techathlon, tech news through games, trivia, and mostly friendly competitions. I'm your host, Jason Letterman, and playing along with me today are Corinne Cannoli-Iosio.
Oh my god, so delicious. Why are you doing this to me?
Stan S'mores Horacek.
Yeah, but I'm the kind with the peanut butter cup instead of the Hershey bar. So, upgrade.
Oh my god, level up.
Yeah.
And Rob Raisinets Verger.
Raisinets are so good.
Why are you shaking your head like he's wrong?
I just don't like raisins in general, so I'm the wrong person.
They're nature's candy.
Covered in chocolate.
If I exactly. wanted candy, I would have candy.
Raisinets are candy.
Raisins. Let's get started with the Techathlon. 10 trivia questions to catch you up on the week's tech news. I'll ask our panel all about what's been happening in the tech world since our last episode. They'll buzz in to answer and get points for each question they correctly answer. They'll also have the opportunity to steal any question that their fellow panelists answer incorrectly, as long as it's not true or false or multiple choice. Whoever has the most points at the end of the game will win a peanut butter cup s'mores that you make in your own house with things that you buy on your own. Let's get started. Question number one. Android 10 is officially here. Yes, the newest version of Android finally breaks with its traditional naming convention in place of a number. We'll discuss that a little more in the second half of the show. Obviously, the Pixel smartphone line got the updated operating system, but what other device, which is now 2 years old, also got Android 10 on its launch date? Stan.
It's the Essential Phone.
It is the Essential Phone.
Yeah. Everybody remembers what the Essential Phone is, right?
Totally not essential.
It's a black rectangle, right?
It's a black rectangle. It was the first phone that had a notch for the camera, if I'm not mistaken. But the big deal about it was it had a wireless magnetic USB connection on the back.
Kind of like a modular system.
Yeah, so you were supposed to be able to swap mods in and out. And the first one they did was a 360-degree camera. And then there really weren't very many after that. And the phone somehow still exists, I guess, even though I think they announced last year that the second version is just on hold indefinitely. So,
permahold.
Yeah. I mean, that was one of the selling points when that phone came out, was that it was vanilla Android, so it'd be easy to update. So it delivered on that promise, which is that's a little feather in its cap.
It is sort of nice that the Essential Phone has the vanilla Android. That's part of what takes so long for other phones to get Android, is they have to load it with their own bloatware. Samsung gets its own. And
that's like Samsung's the quintessential example of just like takes forever to get the newest version.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it takes years for phones to get the most recent version. So if you really want it, you got to get a Pixel, I guess, is the lesson there.
Question number two. What setting did Gmail officially bring to its iOS app last week to bring a smidge more privacy to mobile users?
I feel like I must have read about this.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to call time. It's auto image blocking to prevent email tracking. Only available on desktop up until last week. Now it's available on iOS. It's not yet available on Android.
No kidding.
Yeah. So this is something that I only learned, you know, a couple years ago as I started working here, that there can be tiny 1 pixel wide invisible images in your email that people can use to track when you have opened an email, if you have opened it, and in some cases on what device and even your exact location if your privacy settings are not great.
And there are plugins and Gmail add-ons that people code that allow you to do this, basically. It's not that it's necessarily malicious or that it's somebody trying to break into your computer. It's just people using an email add-on in some instances to try to see if you've read their email and chosen to not respond to them.
Right. And not all email clients have this feature. A bunch of them have since introduced it in the last few years, but now it's available for iOS for Gmail. Question number three. Speaking of protecting your privacy, what browser just announced it will stop tracking cookies and cryptojacking by default instead of having to manually turn on the feature? Rob.
Is it Firefox?
It is Firefox. There were a bunch of headlines that said, nice, the feature is available in Firefox 69. It's available on desktop and the Android versions.
Yeah, cryptojacking is one of those things that I think people aren't super aware of, where sites can actually use your computer to mine cryptocurrency in a roundabout way, which is not ideal, not like something you want to do.
Taking advantage of the processing power in your own machine.
Right, because that's what costs money to mine crypto is all of the energy that the processors require. So if they can make your computer do it for them.
Great for them.
Yeah, then hooray. Then the jerk guys got some free crypto monies.
Yeah, and again, this isn't necessarily malicious as we were just talking about, but it is something that can slow down your computer, especially a mobile device, if you visit a site that has cryptojacking code in it.
Yes, because web browsers never become heavy all on their own.
That's fair. Question number four is a true or false question. True or false, Apple recently opened its official iPhone repair program to new shops around the U.S. and will still require them to use only Apple parts when fixing devices. Rob.
That is true, I think.
It is false.
Ooh.
It's not required to use Apple parts, but it is required to disclose to you if the store used Apple parts or not.
Interesting.
Stan, you wrote a little bit about this for PopSci.com.
Yeah. It's one of those stories where we're making progress towards what we want. It's really hard to fix your phone now if you're an individual, and that's still true. But now if you're a shop and you want to fix iPhones with official parts and use official tools, you can do so. The person who does it still has to get certified, but you don't have to become like this Apple certified shop that takes this big process.
Right. And this is part of a small part of a larger movement that's called the right to repair,
right,
which is you can't tell me that I can't fix something that I've purchased and own, and you can't necessarily limit what types of aftermarket parts I can use and then punish me for it if something goes, if I need you to continue to service my device.
Right. The saying is that you don't own something if you can't open it, which is the idea here. And like, at the same time, like, this program is a step in the right direction, but the Apple parts are still really expensive. The program isn't going to allow everybody. Apple still can just decide who gets to be a part of it. And there's not really a criteria that outlines exactly what gets you in or what doesn't. So, you know, it's a step, but there's still a ways to go.
I thought an interesting point you made in your article was about like the iFixit scores for which devices are easiest to repair. And I guess Samsung was really low because of all the glue in there.
Yeah, Samsung is notorious. Samsung devices are notoriously hard to fix because everything is glued together.
I had no idea.
Yeah, they said especially about the folding phone was particularly hard because everything was glued to the screen.
It's
basically
glued shut permanently.
Yeah. So, yeah, Apple is a little easier, but Samsung really hard.
Question number five is a multiple choice question. We've discussed the FCC's plan to bring high-speed internet to rural areas several times on this podcast. Turns out they really are working to create that infrastructure, and August saw the most spending thus far on the project, $4.9 billion. According to reporting by Cordcutter News, how much of the fund's $20.4 billion total has the agency spent? Is it A, $4.9 billion, B, $5.3 billion, C, $5.7 billion, or D, $6 billion?
I'm going to guess it's answer B.
B is incorrect. It's C, $5.7 billion, so a little over a quarter of what they've allocated for this fund to get high-speed internet to rural areas of the U.S.
Yeah, this is a big talking point for the FCC at the moment, and it's so hard to cut through the amount of talking that they've done, because this was one of the talking points they used to fight against net neutrality, where they said that if we take away the incentive of the big carriers to deliver this internet to rural areas, they won't, because they're not going to make as much money. And, you know, it's really hard to tell, you know, how much progress they're making. And they kind of have to say that they're making a lot of progress now, especially when they talked about it so much during the net neutrality discussion.
Right. But it's curious that they use it as an argument against net neutrality when, in fact, this is a massive infrastructure project that has to cross state lines, which is an argument that it should be neutral.
Yeah.
Like, more of like a utility.
Exactly.
It's a very complicated issue because,
it's a complicated issue only for people who are wrong.
Right. Because we definitely want internet to these places, but how exactly we get it there is it's tricky.
Question number six. Drone maker DJI recently had to increase its prices as much as 13% on its products in the U.S. On what did it blame this sudden price increase? Rob.
I'm going to guess U.S. government policies like tariffs.
U.S. tariffs on China. There was a new 15% tariff that went into effect just before Labor Day. The Verge pointed out that this is among the first, if not the very first, case of a Chinese manufacturer raising the price of its goods for U.S. consumers due to Trump's tariffs. Panel, I'm curious, do you think that this is something that we're going to see more and more if these tariffs continue, the price of electronic goods made in China going up?
I don't think anybody at this table is an expert in international trade and all of that. But, oh, yeah, sure, Rob. Rob's just like,
I was raising my hand. I'm right over here.
Clearly. But it doesn't take a genius to realize that this is a logical result of things getting more expensive for the companies to produce.
And then the consumer is punished, and I think that's bad.
Yeah, or companies just start making things other places besides China. I mean, DJI is a Chinese company, but, you know, they've also had a somewhat interesting relationship with the U.S. government in that the government doesn't want to use DJI drones in the military.
Yeah, like the Army specifically is like, no more DJI drones, please.
Yeah. So, I mean, that company has like a particularly tumultuous relationship with the U.S. at the moment. So, you know, there's a lot of factors that play into it.
And we talked last week about Google moving some of its factories to Vietnam to get out of China to avoid tariffs just like this.
Yeah, they just sent some drones to pick up the factory and
scooted right across the border.
Yeah, brought it right over there.
Question number 7. We don't often discuss sports here on Techathlon, but the NFL is now gearing up for its 100th season. To try to connect with the youths, the centenarian organization announced a multi-year deal with what social app? Stan.
It's TikTok.
It's TikTok.
Hooray.
TikTok, for those not in the know, is formerly called Musical.ly. It allows users to lip sync to music, and it's become quite a spawning place for memes.
It's very much like, what was Twitter's thing that I've sadly forgotten?
Vine.
Yeah.
It's very Vine.
It's a lot like Vine, yeah. In fact, like someone was tweeting about how the rise of TikTok, it just indicates that Twitter just gave up on Vine too soon.
Because TikTok, they don't only have six seconds? 6 seconds on Vine. You know, Vine was just really long GIFs.
Yeah, it was. There were some really good ones. I think that, but TikTok is the thing of the moment now. There's, you know, entire companies devoting teams of people to making TikTok presences, and brands are having TikTok wars, and all the telltale signs that a thing is getting near the end of its run, and that the kids will soon lose interest in it and move on to some other poorly named thing.
Mm-hmm. Back to Snapchat, everybody.
Yeah.
Question number 8. Last week, in a thread of more than 100 tweets, doorbell company Ring shared that its recordings will not be shared with local police departments unless users explicitly opt into a program that does so. True or false? According to leaked internal documents from Ring, local police departments can share recordings with state and federal agencies without your consent. Rob.
I think that's true.
That is true. And this is sort of the fear among privacy advocates that if you opt into this program just for your local police department, it could end up in some federal database without your knowledge.
You know, and facial recognition, you know, it's like such a double-sided issue where like, it could be cool if you're going through the airport and that helps you kind of get through security or board your flight faster. But on the other hand, like all these privacy implications and concerns here.
Yeah, I mean, if you just have a big network of doorbells that recognizes everyone's face as they walk by, you can cobble together a person's whole trajectory as you go. People can see me coming home, you know, trying to carry all my groceries in, falling down the stairs.
The economy-sized cheese balls from Costco.
Yeah.
Question number 9 is multiple choice. IFA, Europe's giant tech trade show, happened last week, and Amazon was there to show off some serious hardware. In fact, it announced more than 20 new devices. How many of those were in the Fire TV family? Was it A7, B10, C12, or D15? Corinne.
B.
B is incorrect.
Aw, too bad.
Was D15, almost 3/4 of the new devices that they announced.
Soundbar, TV,
mm-hmm.
new cube. right? 4K Cube.
The second generation of Cube, the first ever OLED Fire TV, which won't be available in the US, and also Fire TVs with built-in Alexa mics.
Which is strange that they didn't have those before.
A little bit. It's long range, so it's meant to pick up your voice so you don't have to scream over your blasting TV.
Yeah, this stuff is getting so hard to parse, you know, and I don't think any of them play YouTube. Is that still the case?
I don't know.
No, so they finally worked it out with YouTube, so there is an official app now. And in fact, yesterday I was watching something on Amazon Prime Video on my phone and got a notification that I can finally Chromecast again.
Hmm.
So it seems that Google and Amazon have smoothed over their content fight for now.
It's really sweet when people can get along.
That's nice for me.
Yeah. Until something stupid happens and then you can't
and
watch.
Then I can't anymore. Yeah. Question number 10, the final question of the round. Google and YouTube got into hot water with the Federal Trade Commission and New York State last week. The tech behemoth allegedly violated COPPA, the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act, by collecting information about accounts watching YouTube videos directed at children without asking for parental consent. How much was the total record-setting fine that Google must now pay? Stan.
$173 million? $172
million? $170, I'll give it to you.
Wow.
That's a lot.
It's a lot, although there are people arguing that it's not enough.
Well, financially, it probably doesn't matter to Google. I think Google stock was just fine with that much money having to pay. One of the other interesting parts of that judgment was that they also now have to maintain a system that allows creators to indicate when their content is geared at children so that Google can certify that it's following along with the COPPA restrictions, which is similar to a thing that it did to TikTok, right, earlier in the year.
Yep.
TikTok's fine was not nearly as large as
it was
the
really
Google
small,
one.
Right? Yeah. The FTC now is like telling tech companies that they need to build these systems. And I don't know how confident I am that they have the tech knowledge needed to enforce that.
Well, YouTube's going to try, allegedly. They've dedicated an additional $100 million to creating, quote, thoughtful children's content.
Well, yeah, and they launched YouTube Kids like the day before this came out.
Yeah.
Which is, wow, YouTube Kids is here. Oh. Right. Okay.
Crap.
Well, Stan, you are the winner of this week's Decathlon. Congratulations. Enjoy your peanut butter s'mores.
I'm going to make a victory video on YouTube Kids.
We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back after this. Welcome back. Last month, driver Andy Wallace piloted a slightly modified Bugatti Chiron supercar to a top speed of 304.77 miles per hour. It's the speed record for a road car, meaning a car you can actually buy, and it required meticulous preparation down to X-raying each tire before the run. But not every speed record needs to be a triumph of engineering.
Yeah, Jason, you don't need a massive R&D budget to get famous for going fast. In fact, there are probably lots of benchmarks out there that you've never even heard of. In this game, I'm going to test your knowledge of some obscure feats of fastness, which I'm pretty sure is actually a word. There's no bonus for answering the questions really quickly, but it would be in the spirit of the game if you all did, so I'd appreciate it. Okay, so Corinne, we'll start with you.
Okay.
Question number one. Some animals get all the credit for going fast, like, ooh, a cheetah ran 60 miles per hour, big whoop. But when slow animals go fast, that's an accomplishment. In July of 2014, an animal named Birdie traveled at 0.92 feet per second, setting a record for his species. That's 0.63 miles per hour. Is Birdie a slug, a tortoise, or the person in front of me at the gas station this morning buying $140 worth of lottery tickets while I was trying to get a stupid iced coffee and go to work?
I'm going to say it's a tortoise.
It was a tortoise. Birdie was a tortoise.
Aw. Go Birdie. I'm proud of you.
If you search for Birdie the tortoise speed record, there's like an amazing photo illustration of him like running on a track with like a banner.
He was training.
Yeah, it's really good. I
get the Rocky music going.
Yes. I don't know how fast the fastest slug was. I looked it up, but no one seemed to know. All right, Jason. There are all kinds of typing world records out there, but in 2014, a man set a benchmark for typing with a part of his body that wasn't his fingers.
Oh, no.
He had to type a prescribed 103-character phrase to clock his official record time of 46.30 seconds. What part of his body did he use? Was it his nose, his toes, or a vestigial tail with which he was born that frankly gave him an unfair advantage?
I think it was his nose.
It was his nose. The sentence was, quote, Guinness World Records have challenged me to type this sentence using my nose in the fastest time, end quote.
And how long did it take him to do that?
It took him 46.30 seconds.
Whoa.
And it's really hard.
Did you try it?
Yeah, like
Stan typed this whole round with his nose. It took him 18 days.
Yeah. I've been working on this since 2013. I don't know. I knew it was coming. Rob, question number three. You probably know by now that I'm a big fan of mountain bikes, especially downhill racing, which is extremely difficult and taxing, but doesn't require any pesky pedaling up hills. In 2017, Austrian rider Marcus Stokel set a record speed of 104 miles per hour going downhill on a mass-produced mountain bike over what kind of terrain? Was it a glacier, a volcano, or the hill behind my grandma's house where I once fell off my bike as a kid and hit the ground so hard that I peed a little bit and all my friends made fun of me?
Oh, man. That sounds so scary, whether it is a glacier or a volcano or the other thing you just said. I'm going to guess glacier.
It was a volcano.
Ah, I was going to say
volcano.
Was
it an active volcano? Was the lava chasing him?
No, that would have been good,
I want
though.
The lava to be chasing him.
That would have been reason for him to go that fast.
Yes,
for
Birdie
sure. The turtle was chasing him.
just trying rolling. To get away. Yeah. Maybe a slug also. Corinne,
yes.
Question number four.
Mm-hmm.
Supercars are fast, but they still can't hang with the insane top fuel drag racing cars, which need a parachute to stop. In 2018, Tony Schumacher set the top speed at 336.57 miles per hour, doing the quarter mile in just 3.667 seconds. Speeds like that can be hard to visualize, so let's relate it to a normal car. How long does it take the 2019 Honda Civic Touring Edition to go a quarter mile? Hint, it hit a top speed of 92.2 miles per hour during the run. Was it 20.4 seconds, 15.2 seconds, or it didn't make the full quarter mile because the kids started screaming in the back seat and dad finally kept true to his word and turned the stupid car around?
It was 90 miles an hour approximately?
It hit 92.2 miles per hour.
Okay, which means it was doing 1 mile in about 40 seconds, which means, what were the first two choices?
20.4 seconds or 15.2 seconds?
15.2.
It was 15.2.
Yes, I did the math.
You mathed.
I mathed.
I know it was a complicated one, but I figured the fact that you could, in theory, do the math, because it's still accelerating when it hits the quarter mile. So it's
not doing an even speed the whole time.
Right. Well, but if it was a hybrid, it has all the giddy up.
Yeah. So there you go. 15.2. Good job, Corinne.
I can do math.
All right, Jason, you have by far the worst question. So I'm excited to read it to you. It's getting late in the game, and these are starting to get really wacky. In 2013, a man in the UK set a record for paddling 100 meters down a river inside of what kind of container? Was it a dumpster, a pumpkin, or a dumpster full of pumpkins?
How big would a pumpkin have to be for someone to fit in it?
There's some pretty big pumpkins out there.
I feel like the pumpkin is more buoyant than a dumpster. I'm going to say a pumpkin.
It was the pumpkin.
Yes!
The pumpkin weighed 600 pounds.
Oh, my God.
And the requirement was that he had to use an off-the-shelf kayak paddle to paddle himself. And the photo of it is exactly as ridiculous as you'd expect.
He couldn't get, like, a customized pumpkin paddle.
No. Did he hull out the pumpkin, or was he just sitting on it?
No, okay. He emptied the pumpkin and sat
in
it
the goo.
Like he was a baby on Halloween in a photo shoot.
He made so many pepitas.
Yeah, it was it's gross. I hate pumpkins. Pumpkins gross me out to no end. And you should look up the picture. He looks like a stuffed pepper going down the river. Oh, Rob, I didn't realize that I had left you this one that you have a better chance at getting this than anyone else.
Let's see.
The world's fastest supercomputer, at least for the moment, is called Summit. It's a ridiculously powerful machine that requires 185 miles of fiber optic cable and 5,600 square feet of floor space. How many gallons of water pump through it every minute to keep it from overheating? Is it 4,000, 12,000, or one petaflop, which actually isn't a measure of water, but I really like saying it and wanted to make sure I got the chance.
That sounds like it might have come from an article I wrote. And I don't know the number of water. I'm going to guess 4,000.
It was 4,000.
Sweet.
Yeah. So every minute, 4,000 gallons of water pumped through it.
Whoa.
In order to keep it from overheating.
Just from spontaneously combusting.
Supercomputers are fast, but they also don't move.
So I think,
dude.
I think Jason, are we tied?
I do believe that it is 2-2-1.
That sounds correct.
There can be only one, Jason.
We have to use the tiebreaker that I wrote here. Honda set the world record for the fastest lawnmower earlier this year. It's a truly ridiculous looking vehicle with even more ridiculous performance. What is the top speed of which it is capable? Closest gets it. Not, no worry about going over. Just whoever's closest.
48 miles per hour.
73 miles per hour.
It was 150.99 miles per hour.
That's faster than Honda Civic Touring Edition.
It does the 0-100 in 6.29 seconds.
Wow.
Yeah, it goes real fast. It's real dumb looking though. It's like looks like a go-kart. I think there's like these really weird specific rules where it has to technically be a lawnmower, but it's not going to mow the lawn when it's going 150 miles. I mean, it might by accident. It'll ruin the lawn. I guess.
Well, Corinne, congrats and thank you, Stan. Let's move on to our final game of the episode. As we talked about during the decathlon, the latest version of the Android mobile operating system is out now. It's called Android 10, and that's kind of a big deal because it breaks 10 years of naming conventions. Rob, what's up with this change?
It is a sweet change indeed. And that's because for about a decade, Google used the names of desserts or other treats to refer to different Android versions, and they went in alphabetical order. For example, if there ever was an Android version that started with the letter T, they could have called it Android Tootsie Roll. In memory of the old dessert naming convention, I'm going to give you a letter from a real version of Android in random order, and you tell me what tasty food it was named after. Each person gets 2 points if they get it right away, and you get 1 point if you get it after I give you an optional clue.
All right.
Sweet.
Sweet.
All right, Stan, we're going to start with you. What does Android F stand for?
Oh, fondant.
No. The answer is Froyo.
Froyo, right.
Yeah. It came out in 2010, and one little feature it gave was the ability for people to use their phones as a Wi-Fi hotspot. Corinne, this one's for you. Android G, what did the G stand for?
What the hell? What dessert that starts with G? Graham cracker? Nope. So wrong.
Also wrong. Corinne gets 0 on that. The clue was going to be, I kind of want to say the clue anyway.
That's fine.
One popular way to eat this food is in the shape of a man.
Gingerbread.
Oh, gingerbread.
Yeah, gingerbread
right.
Man. This came out in 2011, and it allowed your phone or Android phones that were running it to work with NFC chips, or stands for near field communication. Just bring your phone near an NFC chip, and it will detect it.
Yeah, it's good for mobile payments and things like that.
That's how exactly. Android Pay works.
Yep.
Yeah.
We just said the same thing in different ways.
Yeah, I was already had too much momentum to stop saying it.
Jason, this one's for you. Android L. What does the L stand for?
That's not one of the ones I know.
Remember, if you don't know it, you don't have to guess. You can ask for the clue.
That's true. I'm going to ask for the clue.
Okay. This candy is on a stick.
Lollipop.
Exactly.
Nerd. You're supposed to just guess blindly.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would have guessed. Well,
this is more a test of your dessert knowledge than your Android knowledge, Jason, and I'm surprised at you.
I was going to guess lemon meringue, which I knew was
just
wrong.
Not even what?
But also a solid choice, I feel
thanks.
Like.
Thanks.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, Lollipop came out in 2014, and one of the goals of that system update was for your battery to last longer.
Mm. Yes, please.
Okay, question 4. Stan, we're going back to you. We're at Android I. What does the I stand for?
Is it ice cream?
Oh,
I don't care. That means no.
Sandwich. It's ice cream sandwich.
Yes.
What? Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I stands for ice cream sandwich. Stan, I'm going to give you 1 point for that because you kind of got
there
it right.
We go.
Yeah. And ice cream sandwich was Android 4.0. It came out in 2011. And the big focus of this was like on UI or UX improvements. And it introduced things like folders for the home screen so you could combine apps together.
I heard that that's the version of Android that most Android phones ship with now, the one from 2014. It's not really. I was just making fun of Android for anyone who wants to send me an angry tweet.
Question 5. Corinne, we're back to you.
Mm-hmm.
We're at Android C. What does C stand for?
God, why does everybody else keep getting the ones that I know? Oh, God. Oh, just give me the hint.
Okay, you might eat one of these little frosted round things at a birthday or maybe an office party.
Cupcake.
Yes. Android C for Cupcake came out way back in April of 2009, so more than a decade ago. And it included basic stuff like a keyboard on the screen that you could type whether the phone was oriented vertically or horizontally.
Now, do you remember the first Android phones, those giant candy bar things with the, like, chunk slide-out keyboard?
That was the first alphabetical dessert one, right? Because...
Yeah, it was. The other ones had kind of like internal code names, but this was the big one. Came out in 2009, the first big, you know.
Because it came after alpha and beta, so they were in C.
It's my favorite letter in the Greek alphabet, alpha, beta, cupcake.
Okay, Jason. Well, let's do Android D. What does the D stand for?
I'm not going to ask for the hint this time. I'm going to guess. I'm going to say donut.
Oh, my gosh. Jason gets it right. Android D for donut. 2 points for Jason.
Woo!
Android donut was version 1.6 and came out September 2009. So, again, like over a decade ago or just about a decade ago. And it boasted a multilingual speech synthesis engine called Pico. You know, it could read the text to you out loud if you wanted it to in some cases.
Should have been Android Ding Dong. Ding Dongs are amazing.
Stan, this is for you. We're at Android H. What does the H stand for?
There's like, I told you there's three of these I know, Rob, and H is not one of them. Give me the hint since we're going fast.
Okay, the hint is it involves bees.
I mean, it's honey, I guess, right?
Oh, man,
honey,
okay.
Honey bees? Keep honey, honey smacks?
Keep saying words like that.
No, I quit.
Okay, it's honeycomb, and I don't know, Jason, does Stan get a point for that?
No.
No.
Okay.
I don't want your stupid pity point.
Okay.
He already has one pity point.
I'm too nice. Honeycomb was Android H. The big thing about this was it was designed to work well on big screens like tablets as well as regular phones, and it came out in 2011.
It was on the Motorola Zoom. Remember that?
Zoom with
the
an
giant,
X.
Yeah, the giant honking thing.
How do I remember like random stuff like that but not... What's a dessert that starts with H?
Okay, we're going to keep cruising around.
All right, let's go.
Next question's for you, Corinne. We're at Android E. What does the E stand for?
Eclair.
Oh, you just nailed it.
Boom. Really, 2 points. Gimme.
Really good job. Corinne gets 2 points. My hint for you would have been, this is a fancy French dessert, and it has cream in it, which is gross.
It's just like a rich man's Twinkie.
Dessert hot dog.
Android E, or Eclair, came out in October of 2009. One of the little features that it boasted was that it allowed people to search through their old SMS messages. And so Android E refers to versions 2 and 2.1.
Can you even search through your old iMessages?
Yes.
Yeah.
I always think I can't for some reason.
If you go into the Messages app and pull down, the search bar comes up.
I don't want to know. I don't want to search for anything that I want to search for.
I regret every text message I've ever sent.
Yeah.
Question 9. Jason, let's do... Android M, Jason, what does the M stand for?
Is it marshmallow?
It is. Good job.
2 points, 2 points, 2 points.
Android M came out in 2015, and it supported things like allowing you to unlock your phone with your fingerprint. And if you go to the official website for Android M, the tagline is, S'more to love.
Aww.
Stan, let's do Android J. What does the J stand for?
I'm really excited for no one to ever trust anything I ever write about Android ever again. Now, I honestly don't know. And I don't want the stupid hint. It makes me feel like a jerk. Jicama.
It is not Android Jicama.
Darn it.
It's Android Jelly Bean.
Oh, right. As soon as you say these, I'm like, what is wrong with my brother? Like, I maybe should go to the doctor.
I think
this.
You just need to spend more time at the candy store.
In your defense, Dan, I think one of the reasons that Google is switching to numbers is because, like, who can remember these desserts?
It's one of Google's biggest problems with Android is this fragmentation. And then when you go to talk about it seriously, you have to be like, well,
lollipop doesn't work with jelly bean. And
yeah, and it seems so ridiculous. Like, I have to imagine when you're answering serious questions about the biggest problem with your platform, you have to use these silly words. It probably feels genuinely bad. It makes sense for them to change. And also, it's going to be easier for me to remember now. So next time we play this game in 10 more years, it'll be all good.
It is pretty crazy that even the same number version, but a new, like, so like 1.2 can be a different letter than 1.3. It feels very arbitrary to me.
Yeah, it's confusing.
When they would assign a new letter.
Okay, we've got two more, and we're on you, Corinne. Mm-hmm. Let's do Android K.
Kit Kat.
Oh, nice. Corinne nails it. One of the big points of this operating system version was for it to run really well on cheaper phones that didn't have powerful processors, and It came out in 2013.
Okay, last one. Jason, Android N. What does the N stand for?
It's Android Nougat.
Jason gets 2 points. And Android N or Nougat was version 7.0, and it supported VR if you had like a Daydream compatible phone.
Mm.
Okay.
Daydream. I forgot about Daydream. I have one of those.
So Jason wins. Congratulations, Jason. Your prize is a Twix bar that I'll buy you sometime.
Hey, I'll take that. Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you all for playing panel, and thank you for listening along in the audience. We hope you enjoyed this episode. We'll be back in your feeds next week with another episode of Popular Science's Techathlon. Techathlon is a Popular Science podcast. We're available on all major podcast platforms, so subscribe wherever you're listening now. And if you like what you hear, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It will help other people to find the show. You can buy our merch, including t-shirts, tote bags, and mugs at popsci.threadless.com. The show is produced by the entire PopSci tech team and me, Jason Letterman. Our theme music is by Billy Cadden. If you have questions, suggestions, or opinions to share, tweet us at TechAthlon Show. Thanks for listening.